Hello guys, and welcome back to Mama Jojo Uncut Mary Jo Injection episode 25, and I have Jill Ritchie on this week. She is a legend. It's quite an emotional podcast for me. Listening to it back really got me. You'll understand when you hear, but certainly the thing about leaving the house, and I spoke on stories this morning about leaving the house as a parent and why I believe it to be one of the most stressful parts of being a mum, is trying to get out the door, be it for work, the school run, social occasions on the weekend. It can be even harder when certain hubs of mine is around and he needs to go for a third pee and another shower and change his top, and I'm going, can we just go, because I hate being late. But there's that balance between really thinking about the way we speak to these little people and make them feel when we're trying to get out the door. So really powerful part in this podcast. Another thing is, yeah, I do what's right for the company. Very, very powerful statement. It's not just about the company, be it your own company or a company you work for. So much more. What's your wellness worth? I write about this in the book. I've spoken about this on the podcast before. You do what's right for you guys, okay? Let's keep sharing, supporting. Please keep rating us, guys. Jill definitely deserves lots of stars this week. She's nailed it. You can rate every week, so please give us another star this week. If this impacts you, please send the link to someone you think it will help. That's what we're trying to do. Help people, spread the mojo. Keep talking, sharing, be brutally honest, and thank you for being here. Let's get her on. Welcome to Jill Ritchie, Success Life Coach. Let's get cracking. So thank you for coming.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be here.
It's lovely to have you here, and I feel like we've got loads to discuss. I don't really know where to start. I think we should start with your background with the corporate world. Talk about that. So tell us about your role and what was going on in your head at that place.
Okay, so I have been in a corporate role for 16 years, and to be honest with you, I never really saw myself being in a corporate role, although I spent most of my working life there. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actress.
Same here, I think.
Oh no, I wanted to be an actress, or I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted just to entertain people, make people feel good. Like, I was always making up radio stations. Like, you know, used to press play and record at the same time.
Yeah.
I would interview my sister and get her to pretend she was like Danny Minogue or something. And I just used to love making people feel good. And that was my vision as a kid. However, I was from a little place called Bathgate in West Lothian, and that just never really happened to people that stayed there. And even my reports as a kid was, Jill's a great kid, but her head's in the clouds. She's a daydreamer. You know, she's just, you know, always singing and dancing, and, you know, but she really needs to study. And back in the 80s and the early 90s, it was a case of, you were either academic or you weren't.
Yeah.
There was no in between. So if you weren't academic, you weren't really, you know, there was kind of like, right, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So I discovered at about the age of 19, 20, that I was pretty good at sales. And I think the reason I was good at sales was just from talking to people. And it wasn't really being a hard salesperson. It was just conversations, again, getting to know people, and then that's how I managed to get my sales.
Okay.
So I was good at sales, and then I was promoted in a bank, and then I moved on to Royal Bank of Scotland, and I was in there for many years, and again promoted to the biggest branch, which was the flagship branch at St Andrew's Green. I was only 25 then, so I had like 88 staff. So it was big for such a, you know, young person.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. It's proper.
It was. However, I never really found it so difficult. And I don't know if that's because I was young and I didn't maybe tend to worry about that side of things. And I also had a really great boss who believed in me.
Okay, well, that helps.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he gave me so much confidence. And even back then, when I look back at it, there was a few issues with people that were maybe jealous, and, you know, they saw me that, you know, there's this young person coming in here. We've been here for 20 years and, you know, who is she to come in and do well? But because I had the backing from my boss, who was so encouraging, mm-hmm. I just felt like it never really affected me, and I felt like I had a voice.
Yeah.
And then from then I went on to another corporate bank, and again, it was okay, but I went off to have my first little boy and then returned and just probably really struggled mm-hmm. from then.
Okay.
And, you know, see if I'm honest, it probably wasn't because I had a little boy. In my mind, I feel that I went back to that world, and you do tend to be overlooked for things, because I think there is this, or there was where I was, this perception that, you're a mum now, you're going to be wanting to get away early. Oh, you're going to be phoning in sick when they can't, you know, when your kids have got a cold, it's going to be their phone call. And
it's a horrible feeling, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, when your kids do get poorly, you know, I remember, again, trying to, I'm not going to say farm them off to people, but yeah. I felt this incredible pressure uh-huh. to still keep up with everyone else, that I would, you know, be getting my in-laws and my mum and, you know, childcare. Can you take them? And really, they just wanted to be with their mum.
Yeah, it's horrible.
But you just go, you know, I can't, you know, I've got to go into work. I would then start prioritising that environment mm-hmm. for what, really?
Yeah.
It was quite like, oh God, what am I doing? And it was probably just to keep in and still stay in that box that you know, that fitted in, you know, I wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be known as, in inverted commas, one of those mums that's you know, there's always a drama or something's going on. So I desperately tried not to let being a full-time mum affect my work.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was in a leadership role.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of pressure, and when you get to a certain level where I was, you have got to do it all.
Yep.
You've got to do it all.
And you don't have, I speak to mums and they didn't have the option to cut their hours down. It was mm-hmm. really frowned upon. Mm-hmm. They were thinking, I mean, childcare alone, when you've got a couple of kids as well, mm-hmm. and they were going to be going to work full time and then paying mm-hmm. a massive chunk of their salary out. So if you think of it from that point of view too, it's a lot at stake.
Completely. You know, I went back and then, you know, I did a role which I enjoyed, and then quite quickly I went off and had my second child, and, you know, I felt okay. But when I went back after having Eden, the second one, everything just kind of went wrong for me.
Okay.
Really wrong. It's like you say about this pressure I put on myself. Mm-hmm. I definitely put it on myself, more so going back after having the two. But being completely honest, there was definite pressure from that corporate world.
Yeah.
To, you know, you chose to have kids, so, you know, you still have to.
You have to just deal with it and be here. And if you're in that level of position, mm-hmm. you just do what's right for the company.
Yeah, you do what's right for the company. And God, even when I say it out loud,
you do what's right.
What on earth was I thinking? But there's so many occasions God, honestly, I did an article about this, and I remember feeling so scared to put it out, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to speak my truth here and just get it out there. I remember losing my shit so much with the kids, like, because of work, because of trying to get them out the door. We've all been there, right?
Oh, I hate it.
The kids want to get their freaking shoes on. And do you know what? I still get ratty with them when I tell them 50 million times to get their shoes on and they don't do it, and they just, like, fanny and on. Do you know what? But God, I would be screaming, like, get your shoes on, like, crazy lady, and driving in the car, you know,
like a maniac.
I remember one time, right, I haven't shared this, actually, in fact, I shared this with one person, my sister, because I broke down to her on the phone. It was so bad. I'd had a message from my boss. It was like 7 a.m, and you could tell by the tone of the message that I got, it was really, like, really aggy, and straight away it set me off on the wrong foot. I had that knot in my stomach. I was getting missed calls here, there and everywhere. I'm reading emails on my BlackBerry. I'm trying to get the kids out the door. And God, they were even younger then. I mean, they're 7 and 4 now. So, you know, they were probably like 2 and 5 or whatever, you know. And I got them in the car, literally like speeding out my drive. Mm-hmm. And the wee boy sneezed, right, and I didn't have a tissue, and I was like, oh my God, you've not got a tissue. And I slammed the frigging brakes on, and do you know what, he nearly went through the windscreen. I hadn't even put a seatbelt on.
Easily done though, easily done.
But do you know what, it would have been easy. It is easily done, right?
I bet you felt so much guilt though.
But because of where my headspace was at, I thought, you absolute psycho, Jill, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I would love to sit here right now and be honest and say, and that was it, that was my turning point, that wasn't my turning point. I went on for about another year like that. Mm-hmm. I would like get them out the car, like literally like throwing them out to, you know, nursery, childcare, school, P1, and the wee boy really struggled in P1. And it was probably because he would see me so stressed out, and there was a lot going on at home as well. You know, my mum wasn't well at the time, so there was a lot of pressure, but work didn't give. Mm-hmm. And I was so busy trying to get them out the door, not thinking about how it was affecting them or how my mood was affecting them. Those little sponges that take in absolutely everything.
I know, breaks your heart.
Right? That all I was thinking is, I need to get on a call. I need to get on a conference call in the car. I need to zoom along the motorway and get into my work. Or I need to deal with this issue at work as soon as I get in. And that went on for about a year until I left. Mm-hmm. And it was just crazy. Like, there's so much stuff that, and I just felt like I couldn't, you know, I couldn't speak to anyone about it. You know, so many times I would literally go and shut myself in an office and like cry for like 10 minutes.
Because you felt helpless.
I just felt
trapped.
Like I was trapped, suffocated, weak, shit at my job. Everyone knew more than me. I was utterly shit. I was a shit mum, shit partner.
It spirals. I think the mum guilt as well, and we've got all these hormones and these emotions, and when we have her, I mean, the other day, just from PMS, I can feel there's a few days a month, some months impacts me and others not, and I don't know what that's to do with. I've been doing my research. It could be the moon, it could be extra pressures you have on. But the other day I was just trying to get them packed up, and where were we going? Oh, I was leaving out early. I was actually taking Charlie to soft play, but I had a photo shoot in the afternoon, so I had to pack like outfit changes and la la la. So I getting them packed, and Bonnie had to be at school, and we were going to be late, and Charlie wasn't listening. I just said, "Will you just get your shoes on?" I screamed at him, and he just went, "Oh!" And it just broke down on the stairs, and I actually had to shake myself and say, "Look, I know you're feeling ratty. It's PMS cycle time. I get it." But I had to just stop and say, "Baby, I'm really sorry for shouting at you like that. It's just mummy needs to get Bonnie to school, and I don't like being late. I'm really sorry." Gave him a big hug, but you could see his wee heart, and I just thought, it's so easy to lose our shit. It's so easy. Sometimes just a bit of a wake up to go, actually, how important is this? Uh-huh. How important, how much is the world going to change if I'm 5 minutes late, or for that photo shoot I forgot to pack lipstick, or if I couldn't find the rollers or whatever? This is my babe. Like, at the end of the day, when you look at your kids, like, they're your whole world. But it can be so easy for everything else to take priority. And sometimes it's just having that time to really, I call it like gushy mindfulness, or you know, having those pockets of time just to really go, because there's nothing wrong with being busy and having goals and everything, mm-hmm. but just to have those moments in the day where you can go, wow,
when you look, breathe it all in,
look mm-hmm. at these little miracles. Like, yes, they can be full of snot and cheekiness, and they can really push out all our buttons, but when you really strip it back and you just look at their hands or feel their head, or just, you know, the simple things, when you're present with that, mm-hmm. I get tears in my eyes and stuff. You know, you were saying earlier you cry a lot now. Mm-hmm. I cry so easily now, mm-hmm. but it's a really good thing, because
totally.
I don't know if that's when you strip things back. I mean, you say, and one of the buzz expressions at the moment is find your truth. Mm-hmm. Perhaps when you are living it more, it's more easy to cry, or I don't know.
You give yourself permission,
uh-huh.
don't you,
uh-huh.
to just actually be you and uh-huh. live in the moment. And I thought that I had pockets of that I did that, but it was nowhere near enough what it should have been,
yeah.
Because I was living probably a huge part of my life how I thought others thought I should,
uh-huh.
if that makes sense. Uh-huh.
So like, you mean like people that were saying put on a performance, or
yeah.
don't air your dirty laundry, or?
Well, potentially, I think so. I think, like, because I'd been in that world for so long, and, you know, having to be professional, Jill, and obviously you do need to be professional, but there's almost this, you know, you're in this, if your face doesn't fit, and you're so desperate for it to fit when you're in that world, because you're always, you know, talk about pure comparison, and we can talk about that in a wee bit as well if you want, but in that corporate world, you almost feel like you're a child again, because mm-hmm. everything is, you're compared against your peers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, that was a really good job you did, but this person was just a little bit better than you at it, so you're not getting as good a rating, and they're getting more of a pay rise than you because they're a little bit better than you at this. And all the time, I mean, you could put on the performance of your life, achieve every target, have an amazing engagement, colleague engagement result, but then you've done everything that you can possibly do to be the best that you can be at your job, and then it comes to the end of the year and you sit and your manager says to you, yeah, that was really good, but this person also did that, so you're not getting that rating, you're just wow. standard. And you're just told wow. all the time your standard. And it is so gutting, because I remember thinking, all this pain that I've put myself through, all the tears, the stress, it impacted everything in my life. It impacted my relationship with Daryl, my partner, mm-hmm. The pressure, my relationship with my amazing, beautiful children. For what? Just to scrape by with what, an extra maybe £1,000 a year if I was lucky.
Yeah.
All that shit for that. But I was so desperate to fit in, because I thought, well, what's my alternative?
Yeah.
This is all I've got. I can't do anything else, because I've become so conditioned to believe that I was just, you know, you're just standard, or you've got pockets of greatness. Yeah, you've delivered on that and that was really good. But we like this person a wee bit more than you, so no, they're getting it over you.
So what was the breaking point when you thought, I'm leaving?
The breaking point, I ended up going off, and I'd never went off with stress at work. Never. Again, I found it very shameful. And I remember, you know, I come from a single parent family. My mum was an incredibly strong woman and raised my sister and I to, you know, be strong women and, you know, don't take shit off anyone and, you know, but I just remember feeling ashamed, but I was at a point where I just thought, God, this is going to sound so bad. It got to a point where I was thinking, I hope I get ill over the weekend. Like, I hope I get really ill mm-hmm. and I can't go to work. Or I hope even just a little bump in my car, nothing too serious, but enough just to keep me off of work.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're starting to think those thoughts,
That's not good.
And I, for about 6 months leading up to it, maybe even more than that, probably about a year, I was waking up at like 3:34 in the morning, soaked in sweat.
Wow.
Soaked in sweat, like literally having to change.
So that's an anxiety symptom. Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, yeah. Complete and utter. However, my hair was falling out.
Wow.
However, I didn't put it down to stress. I actually thought I was going through the early menopause.
Oh.
Like, I went to the doctor. Dr. Google, I'd been on, goes to the doctor. I said, do you know what? I think I'm going through the early menopause. You need to do some blood tests or some stuff going on here.
How old are you?
I am 38.
Oh, so my days.
So 36 I was at the doctor saying I'm going through, and they did the blood test.
I've just turned 36.
Well, I was losing all this weight, but I was eating and I just couldn't work it out. And they were
so
saying...
You were still eating, but do you think you were eating less because of the stress?
No, I was eating, but just eating more rubbish. Right. But I was just, the weight was falling off me. Yeah. And people were starting to comment on it.
Were they saying it in a good way? Like, look at you? Or...
No, not in a good way. Too thin and whispering and... You know, even at work, a few people were like, is everything okay with you? You're really, you know, you're looking really thin. And I was like, look, I'm fine. Because, God, you know, when I talk about anxiety, I had it in abundance. But I didn't have it every single minute of the day. Okay, so when I was, you know, with friends, and I mean, I'm a very sociable person. We love having house parties and everyone comes round and all that. And I remember when I read your book, I just felt so connected to you because I'm like, God, that's like me.
So nice always, entertaining people, isn't it?
We are like the entertaining house. Everyone says that, you know.
I can picture you throwing a brilliant party.
Oh, always. And Dad will always say that. He's like, who's all coming? I'm like, I don't know. My last count's about 50. He's like, 50? Are you joking me?
Oh, it's expensive as well.
It is expensive. But... I wasn't anxious all the time, but there was always a bit of a cloud over me. Mm-hmm. You know, I did laugh, you know, I did have fun. I wasn't sitting in my room or anything.
Yeah.
But
if you were to add up the pockets of time where you were feeling like that.
Totally, totally. And I remember feeling so stressed and kind of going and saying to my mum, I feel stressed. But my mum had a lot going on. You know, my mum is incredible. She has battled cancer. She is 65 now. She's battled cancer since she was 50 on and off. And
wow.
She has, you know, been through chemo so many times, lost her hair so many times, been told, you know, you've got X amount of time to live, but just defies the odds. She's just amazing. And I didn't want to add that pressure onto anyone to say I'm really struggling because, God, everyone was going through quite a lot as well.
It's hard. You almost feel like stress becomes a competition. And if someone is battling cancer, you kind of feel like, well, why do you want to hear about my problems?
I know.
The thing is with mental health, it's not, especially with things like anxiety and depression, it's very real to you, whether have a disease like cancer, which is horrendous. Mm-hmm. So is the mental health that you can't see. I mean... It can take you to really, really dark places if you don't nurture it. You know, the starters, I mean, you could be in a pit and you could be feeling like you are stuck in a black hole that you're never going to get out of. And I don't know if it got to that point with you where it was just sheer terror in your mind or if it was on the way to that hell.
I started to self-medicate, actually. I remember my mum had sleeping tablets from the doctor and I went into her house and she's always got a stash of, like, goodies. And she didn't really use them much herself, but she had them and I knew where they were and I snuck into the downstairs bedroom and I took a box of them and I was like, I'm going to take these. I'll just, you know, I went to speak to her about it and I thought, I can't put this on her. So I took her tablets and started trying to get better sleeps and...
Did they work for a bit?
They did, but I knew deep down, Jojo, that it wasn't right what I was doing. And, you know, I'd take them to chill me out and then I would have wine.
Yeah. So you're not meant to have alcohol with them or?
Well, I don't know. But I would take them with the wine because I thought, well, wine will relax me. I'll take a couple of her sleeping pills. And I don't think you are supposed to probably drink on them.
I've spoken to people that say they numb, so with anxiety or depression, that have taken them for when they're awake. So not to sleep, but to numb the dark feelings that they get. Was that how, or were you, was it more for sleep you were taking them, just to really chill you out?
Just to chill me out, because I just would go and I would literally not sleep and I'd have like 2-3 hours a night, and that just is a killer anyway. That went on for months, and I mean, I was getting up at like
2-3 hours a night. I mean, that's an anxiety breeding ground.
Of course,
you're not getting your sleep.
Of course it is. Your mind starts playing tricks on you. And
did
I was
you have
getting
caffeine
up
in the day?
Oh God, yeah. Right. I was like 4 double shot Americanos a day.
Oh.
So I was proper wired. And again, I just, nobody knew though. I think towards the end, people started to see it at work. I was under a lot of pressure at work and in that world. And God, you know, I wrote about this before, about the boss that I had. And, you know, I just thought, God, she freaking hates me. Like, she hates me. And I look back now and we actually parted on very good terms. And, you know, we had shared a few moments and it was actually really nice. And she didn't hate me. She had pressure from her boss that was incredible. But I think in a corporate world, they don't realise that just because you don't fit in that box or you have a different opinion or, you know, you have, you know, different views on something, it doesn't mean you're wrong or you're not part of the group, mm-hmm. you know, because I think there is that. And I'm not saying every corporate environment's like that, but certainly from what I've witnessed, you know, if you speak out or, you know, try and be different or have a different view on something, it's like, no, no.
So is it like black and white?
Very. Very, in my experience,
because I would like to, think there are also people tuning in who love their jobs in the corporate world, and really, I mean, I've had Konica on here. I don't know if you heard that episode about her burnout at work.
No,
and
actually,
it's a really powerful one. Episode, oh, I should know the number. I'll look into that. But all about finding balance, and Konica speaks in the book about that when she had that severe. Just, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's a personal thing. You need to listen to mm-hmm. your body and your mind.
Of course. And that's it. And I think that there was that fear from me, and a lot of it was from me, because I thought, you know, if I speak out and say I'm struggling, I'll be overlooked for things. Mm-hmm. People won't take me seriously. And do you know what? I think there is elements of the, you know, and as you say, God, there's some amazing jobs that people do in the corporate world that get a significant amount of support.
Yeah.
A significant amount of support. And for me, it was probably a bit of both, that I didn't want to be seen as someone who needed it. And two, that there is an element of that you, when you're at that certain level, you can't see it.
You can't.
Because you are overlooked. And unfortunately, but I do, I talk to clients about speaking their truth, and that is my truth, that's my experience,
yeah,
from where I was,
yeah.
That I felt like I couldn't say I really need help here, mm-hmm. because you're a bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You're a bit of a pain in the ass.
If it's such a high pressured environment, do you want to add to it? No, there's work to be done, and a lot of work to mm-hmm. be done. I can totally understand. Mm-hmm. I speak to people all the time. I mean, so with you, what you do now then with the life coaching, mm-hmm. is that firstly from a personal point of view, how has that changed your relationship with the kids and your husband?
So yeah, amazing. So I obviously had an opportunity for redundancy that came up, and it was just like the universe came at the time where I was at breaking point, which was
spoke to you.
I was so scared though, although I was living probably a level 4 out of 10 in terms of job satisfaction, which then spilled into my personal life, I was still terrified to leave. But I just had to take that opportunity, and I hadn't been in the bank, that particular role, for that long. I'd only been in there 9 years, and it was like, God, do I stay, do I go? And so I had a chat with that boss, who was absolutely fantastic, to be fair. She was so good at, you know, and she understood where I wanted to go. And what she said to me was, Jill, your biggest strength that you have is that people want to work for you. Like, you take people on a journey. I always remember her saying that, you take people on this journey, and they walk through like fire for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, God, that's my skill. That is what I love doing, because so much of the job was pressurized, but the part that I loved was connecting with people and developing people. And I think that's why I found it so difficult to always put people in this corporate box.
Yeah.
Because everyone's so different.
Yeah, we've all got our different.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone's got different strengths. And if you don't do X, Y, or Z, then you're not part of that. And so I thought, right, what do I do? And I remember sitting, and it was my birthday, and Daryl had said to me, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, this is going to sound really weird, but I'd love to do life coaching. And he's like, do it.
Wow, what a great partner to...
Exactly. And I thought he would be like, no way, Jill, you can't do this, because we had just moved into this big house. We had more than doubled our mortgage. Mm-hmm. And we had so much work to do yet. We're getting our garden done. And I thought, oh God, you know, I can't. And he was like, Jill, just, you know, do it. You can't keep doing what you're doing. You can't keep feeling this way. And he gave me some self-help books. It was The Miracle Morning and The Secret. And I remember reading the first few pages of The Secret thinking, oh, what a lot of rubbish. So you just manifest stuff, seriously. But I thought, I'm so desperate, I'm just going to keep reading it.
Yeah.
And literally from that day on, I just felt like a weight had completely lifted off my shoulders because I had his support. Mm-hmm. I started getting into mindfulness. I went on YouTube and just had some free apps. And I just started doing The Miracle Morning, Savers, journaling, and didn't really tell anyone about it because I thought people were going to think, what's going on with you?
You turn like, into one of those hippie wankers.
One of those woo-woos and all that. What's all this shit you're doing now? Yeah. But I just thought, no, I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for me. This is about me. And I don't want to go to the doctors and get medication for this. I want to try and heal myself. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of did that. And then I connected with a few people on Instagram and a chap on LinkedIn who I reached out to. And it was the Mindful Experience. And I asked him, do you know anyone that does life coaching? He then put me in touch with this amazing guy called Alistair Gray. Mm-hmm. And we had a chat. And I just thought, he talked to me about his life coaching accreditation qualification course. And I was like, I need to do this. It was like my calling, Jojo. I cannot explain it. It was like every part of my soul was just singing, like, this is what you were born to do. Like, you have had to go through all these experiences so that you can do this job now, so that you can help people and give them belief to break through the bullshit. And just... So I did it. I was terrified because, you know, I had never sort of done anything like that before. I didn't stay on at school. Like, I left school and they were talking about doing assignments and I was shitting myself. I'm going, oh my God, assignments. And I was so terrified. When I look at it now, I laugh because I'm like, oh my God. And it never felt that difficult after that. You know, once I started, got over my fear of, you know, not being enough. Mm-hmm. Because I remember going on the first call with everyone and looking at them all. It was like a Zoom call, so you could see everyone on the screen.
How many were a part of the call?
There was about 25, and I remember looking at every single one of them feeling like, I'm going to have a whitey here. I'm actually going to pass out. Everyone, I thought they're better than me, but it was the conditioning that I'd had.
Yeah.
Being compared, always compared, always compared, yes, in that world. Yeah. So I compared myself, oh my God, he's a doctor, oh my God, she's an entrepreneur, oh my God, who the fuck am I? I'm nobody, oh my God. But I kept going with the mindfulness, kept doing my meditation, I do it religiously, and just totally connected with myself. I pulled together a vision board, and fast forward 6 months, and it's just the best thing that I have ever done.
How long was the course?
The course was only for 20 weeks.
Right, so how many hours a week?
So it was on a Sunday, but actually, you know, you could do a couple hours a day on it. And people tend to do it, a lot of people were working full time, but you know, I had the luxury of really investing so much into it because I wasn't working at that time. There was no plan B for me. This was it for me. It was like, I'm putting my all into this.
How many assignments do you have to pass?
Four assignments, and then you'll be observed doing like live coaching, and you also, so you do your written assignments, but you also do peer coaching, so like 10 weeks of peer coaching with someone. I remember coaching a peer that was on it. And then we were advised to do like, go and get some sort of coaching experience. So doing it for free, so coaching people and reaching out to people to do it.
And getting their feedback.
Yeah, and getting their feedback. And So you were doing like, it was like 20 hours you had to do, but I did something like, oh God, about 90 hours. Mm-hmm. I coached like four people.
Mm-hmm. And plus what sort of people were you coaching?
I actually really wanted to take myself out of my comfort zone. I did men and women, and I reached out to a chap on LinkedIn who worked for another large corporate organisation.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because I thought, do you know what, Jill? Really step away from this fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point I thought, I'm never going back to that world again. I'm never going back to it. But I thought, I'd love to coach a guy, because I think there's... I've spoken to a lot of coaches who just sort of coach women.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, men need it so much as well.
Well, yeah, probably more, because men
don't talk about it. Exactly. And I coached him. I said to him, look, would you be interested in doing this? I'm in training, coaching training. This is who I am. And he was amazing. He was like, yeah, I'd love to. And we still keep in contact. And in fact, he has spoken to me about getting me into his world and speaking to, you know, his engagement team around, you know, motivation and my experiences and trying to help them. So it just shows you it can lead to other things.
I think the coaching space is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really didn't understand what life coaching was until I met Emma from Forth Coaching, and we did the whole kind of, I don't know, I found it quite self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that episode, but I don't know what sort of, if it's similar, because she's from, is it Animas Coaching School?
Okay.
Is that different? I don't know if you know about.
No, so that's probably a different one. There's quite a few, isn't there?
Well, I found it initially when we started, it was like transformational dialogue.
Yeah.
Do you do that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
So I found it very self-indulgent because I was just talking at her.
Mm-hmm.
and then they're obviously trained in these probing techniques and things, and I was like, so what do you want me to see now?
I know, so similar, Jojo.
The
so
pausing
similar.
Like, do you do that pausing?
Yeah, holding the space.
Yeah,
holding the space. So I struggled with this, if I'm honest. I remember, because I've coached people in that corporate world for years as a manager, but I found, what I found difficult is that listening space and holding the space, because I would want to tell them what to do.
Uh-huh.
This is what you need to do. This is what you need to do, you know, because I could see, I was thinking, I could see it. I could see where you're going wrong here. I'm going to help you. I'm just going to tell you everything you need to do. And the whole point with coaching is that it isn't doing that. It's getting them to figure it out, because in actual fact, you hold all the answers. You hold all the answers. You just need to connect with it. And it's funny because I've sat with one of, so obviously I've passed the qualification now, and I've got my own clients that I'm coaching, and it's funny.
How many clients are you coaching at the moment?
So I've got seven at the moment.
Wow,
so yeah, seven at the moment. So I'm loving it. I just love it though. I absolutely love it. It lights me up. And the holding the space is an interesting one, because you'll ask a question and sometimes there's just this silence and you're desperately trying not to jump in.
It's really, at first with Emma, I was almost like, can you just tell me what you think on that?
I know.
And she wouldn't, but it was really, really challenging. Mm. And actually looking back now, some of the things that we've spoken about months ago kind of make sense to me now, but she never told me the answer.
Mm-hmm.
She would just say things, and why do you think that is? And it's weird. I'd love to know like how the training goes, because it's a very powerful space. And one of the things I've learned from it is getting time to know yourself, because as you say, totally. We all have the answers, but having that space to figure out your values, you know, what you don't want to compromise on. Really working out who you are, and actually started a blog which may be going out tonight, although by the time this goes live it'll be now a couple of weeks ago, about goal setting, because I was thinking with goals, if I was trying to work out why I hadn't achieved certain goals in my life and why I had, and I would like to say I'm a bit of a goal digger, you know, I've done the podcast, the book, I've run a marathon, I tend to do what I say I'm going to do. I was trying to work out why some of the things I haven't, and I guess if it goes against your values or against your core, so it's understanding if that goal doesn't mean enough to me, I'm never going to follow through on it.
Totally.
So that's sort of, that answer's there, isn't it?
It's so interesting when you talk about goals because and values. And I always thought I knew what my values were, what my core values were. And some of them I did, but I never lived by them.
Do you want to share what they are? Or?
Yeah, so my biggest value for me is freedom, okay? And it's freedom to speak my truth and not be judged. Freedom to take my kids to school and not throw them out the door. Like, to be free.
I would say that's one of mine, actually, yeah.
Which sounds so cliche, but it is so true. Like, I used to say things like, my values are, you know, to be this and to be that. But I never freaking lived by them. I never lived by them. And actually, they probably weren't my goals. They were the goals in my family. Or, you know, what you're brought up to believe. What your values should be.
Yeah.
Okay?
Limiting beliefs
totally,
as well.
Totally. God.
Limiting beliefs are contagious.
Oh,
you know, if you think back, oh, don't do this, don't do that. People tell you things. What you were saying when you got here about when you're going to get a real job. I remember a guy in his 70s and he sort of looked sorry for me when he said it. When are you going to get a real job? And I just smiled and said, oh, you'll see.
I know.
You know, and
it's the naysayers, isn't it? And, you know, I said that to you when I came, and my mum again, it's funny because she came from a totally different world and she panicked with this, and she tries not to say it to me, so she'll go to my sister and say, I mean, I'm really worried about your sister. I mean, what is she doing with us? And, you know, and
what is this life?
What is this? And it's like, do you know what? This is something that I truly believe people need to know about. Like, the limiting beliefs and the self-sabotage that you think, you know, because you'll hear someone saying like that, when you go to get a real job, that won't work. You know, it's all the noise that's going on in your head. And it's just actually just acknowledging that and recognize it, because you still get it. I still get it. You know, I still get those thoughts. Shit. Oh my God. What if? What if? But instead of suppressing it, I'll call it out and say, right, there it is. Anxiety, there it is. Hi, but you're not serving me. Catch you later.
Yeah, it's letting the thoughts come in, because you can't actually stop the thoughts, can you?
No.
They just come and they come. But I think once you start switching the dials around, it's practice. They come in less and less.
Totally.
You know, because you know, oh, actually, I can do that. I can. It's funny, because when I was chatting, a guy, Max, was the one that prompted me to do the podcast. And initially, we were going to do it as a duo. And I was saying, you sure you're up for this? It's going to be a lot of hard work. No. but he said, look, I'm really surprised at you, Joe. You're looking really freaked out. Because I was saying, but what if no one wants to listen? And what if this and what if that? And he's like, I'm so shocked at you. Like, it's so weird to see you behind the scenes. This is not the Joe we see in stories. I said, I'm scared.
I know.
But I'm going to freaking do it.
I know.
And then actually you realise, with a bit of hard work, commitment, dedication and passion.
Passion.
Because you believe in what you're doing. I 100%. Know that, I mean, I get messages every day, your podcast has helped me this week. So I know for a fact right now this podcast is going to help so many people. What an incentive to keep working hard.
God, and it does. And Jojo, I said that to you when I first came in. I relate so much to you. And what your story's done for me was give me permission to be me. It really did, because not corporate Jill, not someone that people think I should be, just be me and speak my truth. That's a Lynette Gray phrase. I love her too, she's incredible. Just to be me and speak your truth, and as long as you are not breaking the law
or being a
dick. Really freaking offensive and out of order. And so what, do you know what? There's going to be naysayers. There's going to be people that don't like what you're saying. But for every one of those, there's probably 10 or 20 that really like it, or maybe more.
Yeah.
I got, right, so I did that article about a letter to my past self. And again, it was so scary because it was warts and all. And it was, when I look back at how far I've come, I would never have told anyone about that, let alone shared it with anyone that could read it. So it's out there now, right? Do you know, I got so many messages from people saying, God, this has really helped me, like you said. And I got one message, and I was when I was on my way to Paris, and it was from someone who had said, I read your article, and I've been in such a dark place for the last 2 years to the point that I didn't want to be here anymore.
Wow.
Your letter to your past self has given me hope.
Wow.
And
I mean,
see,
that's
for
powerful.
Me,
I mean, how can you argue with that? I mean,
honest to God, I thought I could get 100 haters right now coming at me, and all I'm thinking about is, see that one person that I know that I've had a hand in helping them and give them even hope, because if you've got hope, then so I've got that person in my group now, I'm checking in with them, and it's not for the money. And of course, like, this job, and you know, I talk about people investing in themselves, and it can be quite expensive, but see, for me, the best investment you will ever make is for yourself.
Oh, of course, 100%.
I've spent thousands of pounds on handbags, right? I swear to God, and I still love all that, right? I would never have contemplated spending a large amount of money on myself.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't know. I honestly thought, I will never do that. And I remember looking at life coaching packages, and I was like, who would pay that? Are you kidding me? Blah, blah, blah. But see now, I mean, I've got a life coach, and she does it over the phone from Australia, right? I have got a life coach. I have paid to invest in myself because I know how beneficial it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have all the handbags in the world. You can have all the beautiful clothes. You can pay 40 quid to get your makeup done, 35 quid to get your nails done. But see, when all that's off, you've still got the thoughts in your head that are consuming you.
So powerful.
It is unbelievable if you really invest in what's inside and really connect with your heart space and break down the limiting beliefs and the noise and the ego, you could have a limitless life.
It's amazing, because when Emma had approached me and we met for coffee, part of me was thinking, well, as a wellness kind of public figure type person, I don't think it looks good if I'm going for coaching, because what do I, you know, I'm meant to be teaching people, and I'm the mojo giver, and people are coming to me for motivation. And that was just my first limiting belief, I guess. And then I realized, well, actually, we need self-development every day. We're growing and we're growing, and growth can be a really amazing but scary experience. And if I think how much I've grown this year, it's insane. And the confidence and the, you know, the anxiety, like, shown at the front door, and just, yeah, it's crazy. It's totally crazy when you invest in yourself. And other things that you can do, like reading. Like,
oh, I know.
Do I need to watch Love Island tonight? I didn't watch Love Island. I read books.
No.
Why did I want to look at people with six packs that I'm never going to have? I mean, I understand. I like, I love... I didn't get to see The Last Maid in Chelsea because I've been busy with the book and everything. But I love watching, like, a bit trashy TV. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, would I get more benefit out of reading a really good book and learning from that? So it's... We all have the choice of how we use our free time. Yeah. We've all got free time. We've all got, we all need to sleep. We all need to work. Well, most of us need to get some money coming in. We need to wash and whatever.
Totally.
But with those extra hours we have, how do you use them? And if people make you feel bad, like, oh, how can you do that? Or it's not a real job. Or if there's bitterness, you can say, well, we've all got the same amount of hours. We've all got the same potential in us.
Yeah.
We've all got magic in us. We've all got strengths. We've all got something. And it's figuring out what you want to do.
It.
Yeah, just figuring it out. But being focused.
Being focused completely. And God, don't get me wrong, I actually went on this when I was talking about it, saying that, God, how many times did I look at my mobile? And I've started putting it on flight mode to get stuff done, because you become addicted.
Yeah.
You have no frigging time to do anything. You're on your phone all the time.
It sucks you in, though, because once you're in, I find I'm going into videos I didn't even want to see.
I know.
I'm liking things like a robot, and I'm going, right, it's nice to support people as well, because people have been so supportive of me. But at the same time, you kind of need, you could just be like in every single post, thousands and thousands.
Mm-hmm.
When do you switch off?
Mm-hmm.
You need to limit
mm-hmm.
it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I've started, like on Sunday, I put my phone away for a few hours. The other night, came down, left one upstairs because I'll be checking it during the show. Whereas, watch The Bodyguard. Brilliant. You see
that? Oh, it's amazing.
Brilliant.
Amazing.
So first episode, only
amazing.
One episode.
Oh, you love it.
Spoiler alert.
I won't tell
you. Oh, he's so good. So good to see a good Scottish character
uh-huh.
as well.
He's good.
He's brilliant. It was my mum that had said, I think my mother-in-law said too, get into that show. Brilliant.
Oh, so good.
So we got that in catch up and phone was upstairs. And right enough, I went upstairs after and I started checking the phone and going back to messages. I should have just read a couple of chapters of my book and then got to sleep. But that was that time, you know.
I
you've
know.
Got to prioritise. Yes, it's good. Social media is amazing. Our phones are amazing, but we need to prioritise. You need to be strict. So
you
I think
do.
What you're doing, putting the air...
well, that's
mode.
It, because if I put it in a drawer, right, and I don't put it on flight mode, I just automatically go and take it
mm-hmm.
out and I start doing it again. I have,
mm-hmm.
psychologically, right, if it's on flight mode, I'm not seeing anything. No alerts are popping up.
Yeah.
It just works for me.
Yeah.
So flight mode at night,
uh-huh.
I've stopped doing it in the morning.
Yeah.
And then once I've dropped the kids off, because what I was finding was, I was, because obviously we build our businesses on social media, right? And it's a great platform. But also, I'm sitting, the kids are trying to get their breakfast out and I'm like checking my phone at the same time. And I'm like, this can wait. And do you know what? Guess what? It can wait.
Yeah.
It can wait till 9 o'clock till they're dropped off and
mm.
then I'll come back. But I've started limiting myself time
mm-hmm.
in the morning
yeah.
and then switching off again in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And because it's not fair. It's not fair because, you know, I'm sitting with Daryl at night and it's like I'm doing my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can, even I'm hiding it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you hide it under
it's
a cushion
so,
or something.
It's so bad.
I know.
It's so bad. But you know what? That's on me. I've got a choice. We talk about choices, right? I've got a choice. It can wait.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to be, you need to answer this in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Everything can wait a couple hours for us.
Everything can wait. And that's the thing, because we've got freedom. We work
we
for
do,
ourselves.
We do, that's it.
So it's reminding
living
yourself.
Living by your values.
Yeah, I can, yes, freedom.
Living by your values.
Like you've chosen this so you have freedom, so you don't have to say yes to everything right away. You can say no to certain things. You can take a bit longer than you normally would to reply
mm-hmm.
to the message, to give yourself that freedom.
And the thing is, no one's expecting you to come right back to them. Some people might, but they'll get the gist.
That's their issue.
Exactly, that's their issue. It's your issue if you think you need to answer it all the time.
And the thing is, what if you had been in back-to-back meetings all day?
Well,
I have some days where I'm in back-to-back meetings. I'm not on my phone, so
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't see it until 8 o'clock that night. It's nothing personal.
It's not, I know, but it is. It's just being more disciplined and living by our values.
Yeah.
Because it's such a habit to get into, isn't it, by
mm-hmm.
seeing. Because then people expect, oh, you come back so quickly,
mm-hmm.
you're dead efficient, and then you feel that you need to live by that.
Yeah,
that, they think I'm efficient, I need to keep going,
yeah.
I need to be efficient.
Yeah.
But do you know what, we get to make the rules.
Yeah.
We get to make the rules.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I don't want to get into that space. You never want to get in that space where you don't enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, you have to enjoy it. I think for me, it was some weeks it really hits me. And if I've been working really hard,
mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of speaking gigs, or I've had a writing deadline or some whatever. And then I'm like, right, just you have freedom here to slow the feck down. And last week I did that and I spoke
mm-hmm.
on social about it. I made sure I slowed the effect down
mm-hmm.
and it felt so
amazing.
Good. I was present with my kids,
mm-hmm.
like not every minute of the day, but we talk about this in the book, we dip in and out,
mm-hmm.
but we were baking and we were chatting and we were snuggling and
they
I was,
love it.
Oh, they loved it. I loved
oh,
it.
No,
you know, it's
just so good.
Just so nice to give yourself freaking permission to chill the hell out every
give
now and
again.
Give yourself
permission, isn't it? It's just saying, do you know what? I make the rules. No one's forcing you
mm-hmm.
to do that. That's on you.
Mm-hmm. I think you know your gut feeling as well.
Oh,
like,
you do.
You have to learn to listen to yourself when it's getting out of hand and you go, right, enough is enough. I'm just
mm-hmm.
checking the time and we could speak about this all day. We're normally rolling for about 40 minutes, but the chats have been going so well. Really enjoying it. Could talk about this. I think we're so passionate about this subject. We could talk about it all day, but that's been absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Brilliant chat, really important chat. I know
mm-hmm.
it's going to help so many. I think we should shake it off now with a song. And you're also a Greatest Showman fan, is that
I'm
right?
I'm a massive Greatest Showman fan.
Yeah, we've got to do this. We've got to do this right now. Awesome.
lie away. They say we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are.
You too.
Won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us. For we are glorious. When the sharpest words gonna cut me down, I'm gonna send a flood, gonna drown them out. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me, look out, cause here I come. And I'm marching to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies. This is me, oh, 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 oh. Singing. We are bursting through the barricades, reaching for the sun. We are warriors, yeah, that's what we've become. Won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a chance for us. For me, glorious. And the sharpest fire's gonna cut you down. I'm gonna stand a flag, gonna drown them out. Here I come, woo! And I'm marching up to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies. This is me, oh. I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies, this is me.
Wow, this girl is freaking awesome. Woo! I really, really enjoyed this podcast. Honestly, I think really... Oh, crap, who's that? Who's that? Hello? Hello? Hi, how are you?
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.